Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, February 3rd. I'm your reader, Chris Klein. Now for a look at eastern Iowa weather. Today, partly cloudy, winds out of the southeast 10 to 20 miles an hour. In Cedar Rapids, the high of 32 and low of 29. There's a blizzard in the works. The top weather story says, one more quiet day, then we go down. Plan on one more quiet day with highs into the low 30s this afternoon. The next system will arrive Thursday with freezing rain to start things off. We'll see a transition to snow later in the morning through the afternoon. This system means business and likely will cause plenty of problems on roads, especially as the gusty northwest wind kicks in during the late afternoon hours. We'll likely pick up several inches of snow, and blizzard conditions may occur during the evening drive. The bitter cold is still on track for the weekend as well. And now to the local front page articles. The first one is by Grace King for the Gazette. Letter to Governor represents five school districts. Superintendents from five school districts in Cedar Rapids and Marion sent a joint letter to Governor Kim Reynolds this week, asking for more vaccines to be allocated to the state's priority populations, which includes K through 12 staff. The superintendents are asking for more doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as the state's February 15th deadline quickly approaches for schools to offer the option of 100% in-person learning to all students. The letter was signed by Cedar Rapids Superintendent Noreen Bush, College Community Superintendent Doug Wheeler, Lynn Marr Superintendent Shannon Biscard, Marion Independent Superintendent Janelle Brewer, and Xavier Catholic Schools Superintendent Kim Hermson. Quote, you have shown the public that returning students to fully in-person instruction is a state priority, the letter states. In this context, on behalf of our 6,360 metro area educational employees, we urge you to place full priority on protecting our pre-K through 12 school students, their families, and our staff by reallocating these additional doses to immediately vaccinate school staff across the state. Superintendents are asking the Iowa Department of Public Health to reallocate 64,000 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine statewide from the Long-Term Care Pharmacy Partnership Program to the state's priority populations. According to the letter, which was viewed by the Gazette, this quantity of vaccine will allow for every interested school staff member in Iowa to receive his or her first dose of the vaccine before required in-person learning begins. Since last March, school staff have been at the cornerstone of Iowa communities and our response to this global pandemic, the letter states. All school staff members deserve the ability to be vaccinated before being required by law to return to circumstances in which the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended social distancing cannot possibly be implemented. In addition to Reynolds, the letter also is addressed to Iowa Department of Public Health Director Kelly Garcia and Iowa Department of Education Director Ann Lebo. Reynolds' office has not yet responded to a request for comment. Last week, Reynolds signed into law Senate File 160, which requires K through 12 schools to offer 100% in-person learning option by February 15th. Supporters of the measure cited concerns about students not in school falling behind in their education, possible mental health issues for isolated students, and students at risk of abuse not being at school and under the supervision of mandatory reporters. School officials worry that with more students in the classroom, there will be no room for social distancing. More students and staff could have to quarantine from exposure to COVID-19 or test positive. Last month, school nurses received their first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine in Linn County. They qualified for Phase 1A of the state's vaccination plan. Phase 1B, which began Monday, includes K through 12 teachers, school staff, and child care workers, along with first responders and people 65 and older. The other front page article, written by Kat Russell for the Gazette, is entitled "Iowa Family Devastated by Decision to Not File Charges." Cedar Rapids. "This isn't over," Sarah Lathrop said after the Linn County Attorney's Office decided last week not to file charges in her husband's slaying. "This is just the beginning. We're not quitters," she said. "We're going to fight till the end, and something's going to change. My husband was murdered, and someone needs to be held accountable." Joshua Lathrop, 34, was killed May 30th at a mobile home park in Hiawatha when an argument involving five individuals, including Lathrop, escalated into a shootout. After months of investigation, Linn County Attorney Jerry Vander Sanden announced Friday that no one would be criminally charged in Lathrop's death, given Iowa's stand-your-ground self-defense law. Vander Sanden said he believed Lathrop was the main aggressor in the fight that led to his death. "I don't understand how the one person who was not armed is the one getting blamed," said Lathrop's brother, Martin Lathrop, 35, of Cedar Rapids, "and he's the one who was killed." According to the investigation findings, officers were dispatched at 11:40 p.m. that day to the mobile home park in response to more than 20 emergency calls. The altercation may have stemmed from Tyler and Tyrone Bell, twin brothers, searching the mobile home park for two unknown men who allegedly attacked Tyler Bell's girlfriend, the findings indicated. Witnesses said the brothers were searching the park, yelling they were gonna get somebody, and Tyrone Bell was visibly armed. The night her husband was killed, Sarah Lathrop, 33, said they were hanging out and grilling with family in their driveway, maybe four lots from where Lathrop would later die, when her husband received a call from a neighbor. The neighbor said, "Hey, there's these guys out here with guns walking around, and Josh's thought was, I should go talk to them and see what's going on and try to fix the situation," Sarah said, "and it didn't turn out that way." Sarah said her husband did a lot of maintenance in the mobile home park, and most of the people living there knew him. "It was not uncommon," she said, "that he would be called for help. That's the only reason he left our yard that night, and was because the neighbor had called and said, hey, something's going on, can you come check this out," she said. In this report, Vander Sanden said witnesses described Lathrop as drunk and in the mood for a fight when he confronted Tyrone Bell and demanded to know what he was doing and why he was armed, and ordered him to leave the park while blocking Bell's path back to his car. By then, a small crowd, including park residents Chad Harris and Truman Harris, both armed, had gathered. Lathrop then allegedly punched Tyrone Bell in the face, knocking him backward, and the shooting started. Lathrop was pronounced dead at the scene, the report said, while Tyrone Bell, Tyler Bell, and Chad Harris each suffered multiple gunshot wounds. In his report, Vander Sanden said Lathrop's actions ignited a larger conflict. He deliberately confronted a person he knew to be armed, prevented that person from peacefully leaving the scene of the conflict, and assaulted him by striking him in the face, the county attorney said. The fact Lathrop was heavily intoxicated at the time may have played a factor in his course of conduct, Vander Sanden said, of Lathrop's 0.21% blood alcohol level. "Neither the Bells were intoxicated," he said. "Chad Harris' blood alcohol level was 0.162. On Monday, reeling from the county attorney's decision, Lathrop's family said they felt blindsided by the decision and believe Vander Sanden's portrayal of Lathrop and his actions were misrepresented and misconstrued. "I feel like they just used the fact that my brother had been drinking as an excuse to blame him for what happened," Martin Lathrop said. when really it was a Saturday night. He was hanging out with his family in his own driveway, grilling. I mean, I'm willing to bet any person in Iowa in that same situation on a Saturday night would have been drinking. So to use it as a way to blame or discredit my brother is just appalling. Family members said they were flabbergasted to have Lathrop labeled as the aggressor. How could Josh be the violent catalyst when two people left their trailer and began walking down the street with guns looking to get someone, Martin Lathrop said. That's the violent catalyst that caused this situation, not my brother. If you're out looking for trouble, you're going to get someone. You're not defending yourself in that situation, you're causing the situation. The news that no one would be charged in Lathrop's death was devastating, the family said. Overwhelming disappointment and anger would be, I think, the two biggest feelings I have about this situation, Sarah Lathrop said. He deserves better than this. Martin Lathrop said his brother was the youngest, the baby, of six kids. He could be a real pain sometimes, Martin said. He loved to joke around and give people a hard time. He was always pranking people or horsing around. He loved to talk. He would talk your ear off for hours. He never shut up. He was just a normal, funny, hard-working guy. He would help anyone who needed it, Lathrop's mother, Joanne Green, age 61, said. He would do anything to help someone, give anyone the shirt off his back. Lathrop ran his own construction business where he focused mainly on renovation work and worked full-time as a driver for waste management, his wife said. He worked really hard, Sarah said. He wanted to give his kids a better life like we all do. Sarah said she and Lathrop had been together for about 20 years and married for 5 years, adding that he was a hands-on father to his four children ranging in age from 4 to 17. He worked a job where he could go in very early in the morning, so he'd be off in the afternoons, so he could pick them up from school every single day, she said. And I worked evenings, so he had them all night, every night. He's the one that cooked dinner and did the baths and got them in bed. He did all those things with them every single day, and so not having that for them has been devastating. Green said her son loved to ride his motorcycle and was planning a ride for Sunday, the day after he was killed. He has left a huge hole in this family, Sarah said, and now we're learning to live again. Getting this decision from the county attorney's office just kind of put salt in the wound. I don't know about anyone else, but since I got that decision, I've kind of been in fight mode, she said. I'm not going to let Josh die for no reason. Something has to change, whether it's our laws, which allowed this to happen, or whether it's going back through this case and reopening it and actually charging someone with murder. Now we turn to Iowa Today articles. Iowa adds 834 COVID-19 cases. This is written by Gage Miskimen for the Gazette. Iowa on Tuesday reported 834 new coronavirus cases and 13 new confirmed deaths. The new numbers bring the state's totals to 320,340 cases and 4,919 deaths. The deaths reported Tuesday took place between December 8th and January 13th, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. The new cases were identified in 3,231 coronavirus tests over the 24-hour period ending at 11 a.m. Tuesday, according to state data. Linn County on Tuesday added 63 new cases, bringing the county total since March to 18,587. Linn's seven-day average is 68. Johnson County reported 33 new cases for a total of 12,511. The county's seven-day average is 26. Statewide, 116 of the new cases were found among young people up to age 18. Bringing the total number of minors infected with the virus in Iowa to 35,105 since March. Iowa is the fourth to last among U.S. states and territories in the percentage of population to receive the first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, according to the Washington Post. As of 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, that percentage stood at 6.1%. The only places with a lower percentage than Iowa are Idaho, the Federated States of Micronesia, and the Virgin Islands. Iowa has administered at least 194,000 first doses of the vaccine, enough to cover 88.8% of the prioritized population, healthcare workers, long-term care facilities. Iowa is 26th in the U.S. and its territories for the percentage of its population, 1.9%, that has completed two doses of the vaccine. Across the state, 390 individuals were hospitalized with the virus as of Tuesday, an increase from 368 reported Monday. Patients in intensive care units dropped from 92 to 88, and patients on ventilators went from 28 to 31. As of Tuesday, 48 of Iowa's long-term care facilities were experiencing virus outbreaks, according to state data, down 7 from Monday. The gardens in Cedar Rapids, which had been on the state's outbreak list since November 25th, was removed on Tuesday. With that removal, no care facilities in Linn County were reporting outbreaks. In Johnson County, Lantern Park Specialty Care in Coralville remains on the list with 42 cases and 32 recovered. The next piece in Iowa Today is written by Vanessa Miller for the Gazette. Iowa universities apologize for egregious free speech errors. Leaders from all three Iowa public universities on Tuesday apologized to lawmakers for egregious incidents on their campuses that suppressed First Amendment rights and quelled free speech, largely affecting conservative students, and committed to taking corrective action. Since October, we've been reviewing what happened, how the process worked and didn't work, and we're working to implement steps that will prevent this from happening again, University of Iowa College of Dentistry Dean David Johnson told the House Oversight Committee while speaking about his decision in October to send a mass email to the college condemning a White House executive order barring certain types of diversity training. Michael Brace, a conservative UI dental student, replied all to Johnson's message, asking questions and sparking a back and forth that prompted collegiate administrators to call him in for a disciplinary hearing or unprofessional behavior. Brace reached out to lawmakers who intervened on his behalf, and the disciplinary hearing was canceled. Brace told the House committee last week he's not alone in feeling conservative voices are squelched and held to different rules and standards on the UI campus. University leaders told the committee Tuesday that faculty, staff, and administrators have made free speech missteps. "I would like to start by apologizing," Dean Johnson said. Michael's comments in front of the committee on Wednesday laid bare his concerns and fear that he felt regarding his educational future at our college, and for that I'm sorry. "We do not want any of our students to have an experience that leaves them feeling unsupported or fearful. And to be honest with the committee, we have heard from other students, faculty, and staff in our college that we failed them as well." Johnson said Brace was never threatened with expulsion, though he could see why the student thought that was a possibility. He said he would redo the letter informing students of possible discipline and also never again use his voice in an official capacity to comment about a political issue. Several lawmakers indicated their concerns extend to larger systemic issues. Representative Bobby Kaufman, Republican of Wilton, noted the universities have lost several free speech lawsuits recently. "This isn't a second chance," he said. "This is a repeated, decade-long and possibly and probably longer feeling of hundreds of students, if not thousands, that there are two different sets of rules. So, as much as I greatly appreciate, Dean, your efforts, and look forward to seeing them implemented, I expect the entire university, all of you, to come up with a systemic policy." Representative Steve Holt, Republican of Denison, who's introduced legislation to eliminate tenure for faculty across Iowa public universities, tied together the issues. I wonder if the assault on free speech by some university professors is not related to the belief that they're Teflon-coated and indestructible, and therefore maybe we need to look at getting rid of tenure, Holt said. Iowa State University President Wendy Winterstein, for her campus, apologized to the committee for a disappointing, egregious incident in the fall when an English professor distributed a syllabus barring students from choosing any topic that takes at its base that one side doesn't deserve the same human rights as you do. The professor was reprimanded, and the campus ramped up First Amendment and free speech training for faculty, she said. And University of Northern Iowa officials reported making campus improvements after an anti-abortion group in the fall was denied student organization status until President Mark Nook intervened and allowed it. The president did step in, Representative Holly Brink, Republican of Oskaloosa, said, but I think it went absolutely too far. Is there a reason you didn't step in sooner? Continuing with more Iowa Today articles, this one written by Kat Russell for the Gazette. Cedar Rapids contractor accused of ditching derecho repair jobs. Cedar Rapids. A Cedar Rapids man faces multiple counts of theft after authorities said he took money for multiple derecho repair jobs and never followed through with repairs. According to the criminal complaint, Wayne C. Gott, 37, is charged with two counts of first-degree theft and two counts of second-degree theft after he engaged in a pattern of thefts by deception by entering agreements to perform substantial home repair work for four complainants after the August derecho. Cedar Rapids police said they began receiving complaints about Gott in November. The first was November 25th when a woman reported that she had signed a contract with Gott, who was doing business as Construction Plus. The contract was signed September 16th, and the victim wrote a check for $12,750 to repair her back porch and retaining wall. The job was started but not finished, police said. Gott also didn't use treated lumber as required by Cedar Rapids Building Code. On the same date, police said, another person reported signing a contract with Gott on October 3rd and paying him $24,580. The complainant told police Gott had not performed any work, had not provided any materials, and had refused to provide a refund. An investigation determined that Gott used that money to buy a van for $10,000 and withdrew $8,500 in cash. A few weeks later, on December 4th, police said a third individual reported that he paid Gott $7,500 to replace plywood, remove and replace a roof, and replace a garage door. Police said Gott did not tear off the roof, but rather shingled over the existing shingles and did not finish the job. The agreement between the homeowner and Gott was verbal, police said. On December 11th, a fourth person reported giving Gott $3,477 for fence replacement. Police said the individual signed a contract September 14th and the work was supposed to start October 5th. Gott, however, never started the project and refused to give a refund, police said. Police said Gott claimed the signed contracts had no completion dates. Gott agreed to meet with police December 21st, but when the day arrived, said he was ill. He promised to electronically mail documents, but he never did. Police concluded that Gott did not do most of the agreed-upon work and did it poorly when he did. Police said he also failed to provide materials in two of the cases and did not provide proof of materials purchased in all four cases. Additionally, police said Gott refused to refund the customers, and bank records indicate he used a significant portion of victims' money for personal purchases. Gott was arrested January 27th on charges of possession of a controlled substance, marijuana, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Police said officers found Gott in his vehicle outside his home when they went to pick him up on the theft warrants. During the arrest, officers found marijuana and two glass pipes. Next, Iowan faces up to 20 years in child porn cases. This is written by Trish Mahaffey for the Gazette. Cedar Rapids. A Cedar County man was convicted Tuesday in federal court of receiving child pornography involving a 14-year-old Minnesota girl he met online. He is accused in state court of sexually abusing the girl. Randy Thomas Abels, 27, of Loudoun, pleaded guilty in U.S. District Court to one count of receiving child pornography. He admitted to starting an online relationship in 2019 with the teen and continuing contact with her through July 2020, according to a plea agreement. Abels and the girl exchanged sexually explicit videos and photos. A search warrant from one of Abel's social media accounts showed he received at least 8 sexually explicit videos from June through July of last year. Abels and the girl also were found in a park last July in Cedar County, according to the plea. Abels drove to Minnesota and brought the girl back to Iowa. During an interview with authorities, Abel admitted that he knew the girl was a minor. Abels also was charged last September in Cedar County District Court with enticing a minor, lascivious acts with a child, and 2 counts of third-degree sexual abuse, all felonies, and indecent contact with a child and harboring a runaway child, both aggravated misdemeanors. In the federal case, Abels faces a minimum of 5 years and up to 20 years in prison. Next, man arrested in 2019 arson case. Byline is Coralville. A 36-year-old Coralville man was arrested Monday in connection to a 2019 fire investigators now believe was set intentionally. Dustin J. Corey, 36, faces charges of first-degree arson, a felony. According to a news release from the Coralville Police Department on July 20, 2019, officers responded at 7:30 p.m. to an apartment complex at 921st Avenue. Place for a structure fire. The fire was contained to the apartment where it began and the roof area of the building, but other units sustained smoke and water damage. One person was taken to the hospital for smoke inhalation, but there were no other injuries according to the release. A joint investigation among the Coralville Fire Department, the Iowa State Fire Marshal Division, and the Coralville Police Department determined the fire likely was an arson. Next, Cedar Rapids man charged with sexual abuse. A 38-year-old man is accused of assaulting a woman and forcing her to engage in a sex act at a Northeast Cedar Rapids residence. Jovan M. Walton of Cedar Rapids faces charges of second-degree sexual abuse and assault causing bodily injury, according to the criminal complaint. The criminal complaint states Walton threatened and choked the woman while forcing her to engage in a sex act. The woman suffered several bruises and cuts, the complaint states. Walton was arrested Saturday and booked into Linn County Jail. And finally, man charged after discarding laptop. Swisher. Images of child pornography were found on a discarded laptop belonging to a Cedar Rapids man, authorities said. The Johnson County Sheriff's Office said that on May 5th, a Johnson County Secondary Roads employee watched Dussel C. Carter, 32, pull his vehicle over on Interstate 380 and drop a backpack behind vegetation along the road. The backpack contained a laptop that was tracked back to Carter. Deputies said they found 13 images depicting minors in sex acts on the laptop. The original files had been deleted, but copies were found in a database, authorities said. The database had been accessed between March 22nd and May 5th, the sheriff's office said. The images were reviewed by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which reported 4 images contain known child victims. Carter was arrested Saturday and faces 13 counts of possession of a medium depicting the sexual exploitation of a minor, first offense. Each count is an aggravated misdemeanor. On the Insight page, we have one community letter. It's submitted by Charlene Lang of Iowa City. Impeachment trial will affect the nation's future. In many ways, the impeachment trial is like all other trials occurring every day in our courts. One side will present evidence that the accused did the deed. The other side will present evidence that the accused did not do the deed. One side will show that in the past, government officials have been held accountable after leaving office. The other side will show the opposite. Unlike many trials, because of the attacks on legislators and their families, the senators as jurors may be in fear. The same way jurors for the Tammany Hall trials of the 1930s, for the lynching trials of the past, and for the drug cartel trials of the present day, jurors were all afraid for themselves, their families, and their communities. They had fear, but also had courage to stand up. And like all other trials, it will affect our future. If the evidence shows the deeds were done and shows past government officials have been found guilty while out of office, then senators need to vote for impeachment to save our government and save our elections. The January 6th mob, individuals, and their leaders cannot rule. Again, this was submitted by Charlene Lang of Iowa City. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, February 3rd on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Margaret Gleason, better known as Peggy, 88, of Cedar Rapids, died Tuesday, January 26th at Manor Care Services, 11 a.m. Saturday, February 6th at Tehan Funeral Home. Burial will be Cedar Memorial Cemetery. Friends may visit with the family from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday and after 10 a.m. on Saturday. David Michael C., S-E-E, 72, died Sunday, January 31st at the Rehabilitation Center of Lisbon following a long illness battling Parkinson's disease. He will be cremated at Iowa Cremation in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of life will be sometime later this spring or summer. Jacob Paul Dvorak, 28, of Cedar Rapids, passed away January 30th at his home. A private family funeral service and burial will take place at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home and Cemetery. Ken Fagel, 74, of Center Point, Iowa, died Monday, February 1st. A celebration of life with inurnment at Center Point Cemetery will take place at a later date. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Center Point is assisting the family. Marcella M. Lawrence, 96, of Cedar Rapids, died Saturday, January 30th at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy. As per Marcella's wishes, private family interment will be in Czech National Cemetery, Brosh Chapel, and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids are in charge of arrangements. Ronald Robert Smith, no age is given, entered into eternal rest on Monday, January 25th at his home in Maricopa, Arizona. Ron was a 1979 graduate of Cedar Rapids Prairie. Ruth Jean Van Voorhis, 89, of Sioux City, passed away in Iowa City on January 30th. Ruth was surrounded by her 4 loving children and their spouses throughout the time of her death. Though her family grieves her passing, they know that she lived a full and joyful life. A celebration of her life will be held this summer with family and close friends when it is once again possible to gather safely. Catherine, also known as Kathy or Kitty Marie Hattie, age 43, died January 30th after a brief illness. She was born on January 16, 1978 in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. Mark Carell of Hiawatha. A private family funeral service is being held at Cedar Memorial on Friday. The family plans to hold a celebration of life this summer, sharing memories, listening to music, and dancing to fully honor Mark's life. Wan Wong Choi, C-H-O-I, 87, of Iowa City, passed away February 1st at the Bird House Hospice Home of Johnson County. Betty L., maiden name Propst, P-R-O-P-S-T, Lucina, 91, a lifetime Iowa City area resident, died Monday, February 1st, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. A visitation for family and friends will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, February 8th, at the Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service. Family services will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Joseph William Cook, 84, of Center Point, Iowa, passed away Saturday, January 30th, at his home, surrounded by his loving family, from renal kidney failure and chronic heart complications. His body has been donated to the University of Iowa Deeded Body Program for Medical Education and Research. A celebration of life is being planned, and details will be published in a complete obituary at a later date. Robert Francis Shriver, 73, of Bettendorf, formerly of Charles City, passed away peacefully on the 19th day of January at Genesis East Hospital in Davenport. Per Robert's request, he will be cremated and buried in Sacred Heart Cemetery in Burlington, Iowa. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Other notices include, from Cedar Rapids, Rebecca M. Johnson, 28, died Saturday, January 30th, Rife Family Center, Independence. Cedar Rapids, Dolores D. Wright, 91, died Monday, February 1st. Iowa Cremation is assisting the family. Dorchester, Jean Wright, 90, died Sunday, January 31st. Martin Grau Funeral Home of Waukon is assisting the family. Marion, Nancy Geistfeld, 78, died Monday, February 1st. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Marion is assisting the family. Marion, Jack Jr. Lawrence, 93, died Tuesday, February 2nd. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Marion is assisting the family. Ryan, David H. Knott, 68, died Monday, February 1st. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Marion is assisting the family. Vinton, Chuck Meredith, 89, died Friday, January 29th. Van Steenhuis Russell Funeral Home of Vinton is assisting the family. And now we turn to sports. Iowa men's basketball. Hawks ride their bench to crucial win over MSU. This is submitted by Mike Hyas for the Gazette. Iowa City. There's no substitute for winning, and there would have been no winning without the substitutes. The number 8 Iowa men's basketball team had its bench carry it to an 84-78 win over Michigan State at Carver Hawkeye Arena last night to end a 2-game losing streak. The Hawkeyes, 13-4, 7-3 Big Ten, used reserves Patrick McCaffrey, Keegan Murray, Jack Nung, Tony Perkins, and Joe Toussaint for much of the game's last 12 minutes and for quite a bit of the first half as well. Nungi, Perkins, and Toussaint had season highs in minutes. The reserves combined for 39 points and played much of Iowa's best defense. The bench was huge tonight, Iowa center Luca Garza said. I'm so proud of those guys. Garza, unlike Iowa's other four starters, didn't sit much. He had 27 points and 12 rebounds in 35 minutes and drew a dozen fouls as Iowa shot 35 free throws to MSU's 15. He topped the 2,000-point career mark, trailing only Roy Marble's 2,116 on Iowa's all-time list. But Garza wanted the win, not the points. Oh me, ter flip into the 2000s. I didn't come back to score points, he said. I came back to win games. To be able to close one out when we didn't even play our best is huge for our confidence going forward. Michigan State coach Tom Izzo said, if we played this way in the other games this season, we would have won a lot of games. I thought we were going to win the game. Led by Nung's 11 points and 7 rebounds before halftime, Iowa's subs helped erase a 26-15 deficit caused largely by the Spartans making their first 6 three-point tries. The Hawkeyes rallied to assume a 48-43 halftime lead with the last 2 points scored by another reserve, freshman guard Aaron Ulis. Iowa pushed its lead up to 8 points, but MSU's 12-2 run gave it a 61-59 lead, and Iowa coach Fran McCaffrey again turned to his bench. The subs and Garza got the Hawkeyes a 79-70 lead with 3 minutes 38 seconds left. The Spartans closed within 80-78 with a 1 minute 21 seconds left, but starter Jordan Bohannon, who re-entered with Joe Weiskamp with 1 minute 56 seconds left, sank all 4 of his free throws for the game's final points. Toussaint had one of his best games of the season with 10 points and 6 assists. He and Perkins helped shut off the Spartans' 3-point spigot. Patrick McCaffrey, Murray, and Nung continued to help Garza take care of matters close to the basket. Me and Jack, we don't really view ourselves as bench players, to be honest with you, Toussaint said. We started last year, and he started before I got here, and nobody on the bench views himself as a bench player. We're just another player who comes in, you know. Iowa got out-rebounded 42-38, missed a dozen free throws, and was just 5 of 17 from three-point distance. But it shot 50% from the field and had a season-low 5 turnovers. Guard C.J. Frederick returned to Iowa's lineup after being out the last game and a half with a leg issue, but was ineffective. I feel terrible for C.J., Fran McCaffrey said. He's clearly not himself. We'll get him right. The coach said there was no plan to go with his subs as long as he did, but the lineup just clicked. Iowa may need more clicking across the roster in its next game. The Hawkeyes host number 7 Ohio State on Thursday at 6 p.m. Boys basketball. Top-ranked Lynx down number 7 Orioles again. This is written by Jeff Johnson for the Gazette. Springville. They just keep winning, despite some really good opponents and some really big obstacles being thrown at them. The top-ranked North Lynn Lynx beat number 7 Springville for a second time this season last night, 69-59. Also, for a second time this season, North Lynn turned that trick without a top player. All-state point guard Austin Hilmer sat out with a stomach bug. In the first game between these Tri-Rivers Conference powerhouses in early January, North Lynn won without starting guard Dylan Kurt. Pretty remarkable. I would say this one, said North Lynn's Ben Wheatley when asked which of the victories impressed him more. Missing Austin, finding out that news earlier today was kind of shocking. Then we didn't even know if Dylan was going to play this game. They told Dylan he was starting point guard tonight, and his eyes lit up. The way Dylan played tonight was huge. He didn't think we'd get anything close to that tonight. Kurt has been dealing with a knee injury that recently required arthroscopic surgery. He had a game-high 25 points as North Lynn, 17-0, won for the 108th straight time in the regular season and for the 110th consecutive time against a Tri Rivers opponent. The last regular season loss was to Monticello in 2016. The last loss to the TRC team was to Easton Valley by a point in 2014. "That says a lot about our coaches, Mike Hilmer and Griff assistant Travis Griffith," said Kurt, who practiced for the first time in well over a month on Monday. "You can see how dominant we've been. It wasn't just our grade, it was every grade. Looking forward to postseason play." North Lynn hit its first 4 3-pointers and built a 21-9 lead after a quarter. Springville, 16-2, closed within a point in the second quarter, but never could quite get over that proverbial hump. Both teams shot 50% from the field. Wheatley added 15 points for North Lynn, with Rendon Wageman and Alex Kopis leading Springville with 13 and 12 points, respectively. Unheralded guard Jack Hoogland helped the Orioles get back into the game with 3 trays and 11 points off the bench. Girls basketball. Warriors win a rally. This is by Jeff Linder. Cedar Rapids. A couple of freebies provided the visual Sydney Mitvalsky needed, and a spark that got Cedar Rapids, Washington rolling. Mitvalsky erupted for 15 third-quarter points, and Class 5A 7th-ranked Washington recovered from a slow start to bypass stubborn Cedar Rapids Prairie, 63-52, in a Mississippi Valley Conference girls basketball game last night at Prairie High School. "It was a rough first half," Mitvalsky said. "After those technicals and watching those free throws go in, I needed to step up tonight and lead these girls." Washington, 12-1, 8-1 MVC, trailed throughout the first half, and the deficit reached 10 points on 3 occasions. But the Warriors raced back at the end of the half to get within striking range, then pounced behind Mitvalsky's lead in the second half. "I'm glad to step up and do my part," said Mitvalsky, who led all scorers with 19 points. "Some people forget I'm a Division I athlete." Mitvalsky, who is headed to St. Thomas, Minnesota, next year, started her third quarter run with a pair of free throws before action started, thanks to a technical foul on the Prairie staff, their second of the game, whistled as they were walking off the court at halftime. Then it was a left-handed drive for Mitvalsky, then a basket in transition, then a putback off of offensive rebound, then a three-pointer, then another putback, then a 15-point jumper. And just like that, the Warriors led 42-36. Prairie, 6-7 and 4-6, got within 45-43 by the end of the quarter, but the Warriors gradually edged away from there. "It was a crazy game," Washington coach Chris James said. "We had some tough shooting early. We rushed shots. Prairie's a good young team that's well coached." Once Sydney saw those free throws go in, she got that confidence going. Washington's Hannah Stuhlke took just 9 shots from the floor, but still managed 16 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 steals. Jalea Havel added 11 points. Natalie Bennett paced Prairie with 16 points. Cameron Grissel added 13. Katie Reidinger, 12 points. The Hawks scored the first 6 points, led 15-8 after a quarter, and pushed the advantage to 21-11, 24-14, and 26-16 before going scoreless the last 3 minutes and 15 seconds of the first half. Now to Eastern Iowa Briefs, Cedar Rapids. Nature Center's annual spring plant sale begins Monday. This year's spring plant and art sale hosted by the Friends of the Indian Creek Nature Center will be online again, but this time with multiple rounds of sales. The first round, a grow-to-order pre-sale, will take place Monday through February 24th. This first round of sales will include perennials, shrubs, trees, ground cover, and vegetables. The second round of online sales will be April 21st through the 28th and will include annuals and any extra plants available from the first round of sales. Orders will be placed through the Nature Center's website. Curbside pickups will begin May 1st. For more information, go to IndianCreekNatureCenter.org. Spring Plant Sale. Eastern Iowa. Online voting is open for Black History Month Art Contest. Public voting is open in U.S. Cellular's third annual Black History Month Art Contest with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Corridor. For the first time, voting is available online. The public can vote for their favorite artwork at U.S. Cellular. This is a long website. I can't say it. In January, Boys and Girls Clubs of the Corridor members created artwork in recognition of influential Black people from around the globe that include historical figures, world leaders, athletes, and celebrities. The 10 finalists were chosen by Boys and Girls Clubs of the Corridor representatives based on creativity, quality, interpretation, clarity of theme, and overall impression. Voting is open through February 28th. Anyone age 18 or older can vote once their favorite artwork. The top 3 vote-getters will be announced in March. Prizes include gift cards of $250 for first place, $150 for second place, and $100 for third place. Iowa City. Public Library turns 125 this year, seeks stories and memories. The Iowa City Public Library turns 125 this year, and to celebrate the quasquicentennial anniversary, the library plans to hold events throughout 2021. The library was founded in 1896 by a group of civic-minded Iowa City residents responding to the needs of a growing community. Over the last 125 years, the role of libraries has increased in scope, but the dedication to meeting local needs has not changed. Now the challenges of the global pandemic have required creativity and service modeling as library workers are ensuring materials are available, tech questions are answered, and social connection and shared learning are provided through virtual programs. We would love to celebrate with you and to hear how the Iowa City Public Library has touched your life over the past 125 years, said Library Director Ellsworth Carmen. To that end, the library is curating an interactive digital space to post highlights from its history and share stories and feedback about your experiences. Marion, housing assistance grant applications being accepted. The Marion Civil Rights Commission is accepting applications for the Marion Low and Moderate Income Housing Assistance Grant to be awarded in 2021. The Marion City Council has approved up to $20,000 to be used in this grant program. The grant will help nonprofits, charitable organizations, or other entities interested in assisting low and moderate income individuals with programs that address housing instability in the community. Recipients of program funds in 2020 included Willis Dady Homeless Services, Marion Cares, and Four Oaks Family and Children Services. Questions may be directed to Jackson by calling 319-540-6750 or by calling Amal Etahir 319-743-6750. 6357. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, February 3rd. I'm your reader, Chris Klein. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.